It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 278 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm really glad you're listening because you're going to enjoy a great conversation I had with comics creator Philip Kennedy Johnson, who has made one of those books that I just have to tell people about because it's so well put together and such a fascinating story. It's called Smoketown and it comes from Scout Comics. We also delve into the other books he's done, but we spend most of our time talking about Smoketown, about what the premise is behind the book, and how it moves with a very unique way of storytelling. We discuss the different characters and how he brought his team together, as well as how he balances being both a musician and a comics creator in his life. He's got a lot of really interesting and engaging things to say, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to our conversation. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast Philip Kennedy Johnson, the writer of a really terrific series of books, and I've gotten to read the first two called Smoketown from Scout Comics. How are you doing today, Philip?
I'm great, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to talk with you. Like I said, I was telling you just before we started to record how much I've enjoyed the books. The first one, which is available now, is just a terrific book, and the second one, which you made available to me and I got a chance to read, it just blew me away just as much as the first one did. So I love the books. They're terrific.
Glad to hear that. It's been a lot of fun to write. Yeah, the other people that are making the book with me are doing great work.
Oh, the art's terrific, too. We'll get out into all that good stuff. But I wanted to talk a little bit about you. You're kind of a Renaissance man as far as these things go. You live where I used to live in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. And you've written several comic books. But not only that, you describe yourself, and I got a kick out of this, as a musician and a writer. Do you see yourself as a musician more than a writer?
No, I wouldn't say more than a writer. It's just that's what I've been doing the longest. I mean, it's a little quick to already put musician in the back seat. But yeah, honestly, I see myself as a writer just as much as a musician at this point.
That's cool because you have a website, and that's why I'm looking at your description in there. It's Philip Kennedy Johnson, of course, .com. And it talks about the fact that you have a full-time career as a trumpet player, composer, arranger, and a teacher. And you are a sergeant first class in the U.S. Army?
That's right.
Wow. You tour the United States, according to your website, in the Army, U.S. Army Field Band and the Federal Brass of Washington, D.C., which is fun. Brass is great stuff. I sing in choir, and so to me, I always love brass. Whenever we get to sing with brass, it's always such a great thing. Lots and lots of volume, lots and lots of emotion to brass, so I really like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we actually tour with the chorus as well. I'm with the the Army Field Band, like you said, and we travel with the Soldiers Chorus as well. Mm-hmm. I'm actually talking to you from Dallas right now. We're about two-thirds through a 40-day tour right now.
Oh, wow. Okay, man. Of course, the great thing about presenting music, as I always like to say to people, you get so much more out of it than the audience who only gets to hear it once. You've worked with it, you've massaged it, you've studied it, and then you perform it. And in your case, you get to obviously perform it more than once. So you get to do these things a lot, and it's quite an experience as opposed to somebody who gets to listen to it maybe one time.
Right.
So quite something else. The only way you understand that is if you're a part of this or a musician like you are for those kinds of things. So I got to ask then, how did your interest in comics come?
Well, my interest has always been there. I mean, I learned to read from comics when I was a little bitty kid, and it was just something I always enjoyed. It wasn't anything I took as seriously as I do now until many years later, of course. But as far as the musician and writer thing you mentioned earlier, I just like to make things. It doesn't really matter if it's music or, you know, I write music as well, and I write it and I perform it, and I, you know, now I write comics too, and it doesn't really feel that different to me. You know, I just like to make things.
It's interesting. You write this strip called Band with an exclamation point.
Right.
Musiccomic.com. Before we dive into all the other ones, why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because that blends both of your things together, the music and the cartoon comic stuff.
Yeah, it does. I actually was approached by a friend of mine from work, Dustin Mollick, who plays baritone sax with the Jazz Ambassadors. It's a, like the big band component of the place where I work. And yes, I knew Dustin from work and found out that he was also making webcomics. He's a talented artist himself and was writing a lot of his own stuff. So musiccomic.com does music-themed comic strips, but he wanted to do an ongoing series of them, like one that kind of tells a bigger story. You know, it wasn't just a one-off. We could tell longer stories with it. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about various things that we could collaborate on, and we ended up doing Band, which is about a class of kids that starts learning how to play music together from their first year in band, and we can follow them through their career in school.
Am I mistaken, or is this already, there's a trade of this out, or it's only on the website?
As of right now, it's only on the site. Okay. Dustin, musiccomic.com is more Dustin's thing than mine, but it was a real pleasure to be a part of it, and I still think we're going to do more of these. Okay. Both of us have been a little distracted with other projects. Dustin is also the colorist on Smoketown, colorist and letter.
Oh, wow.
And he also is doing projects right now with his brother, Nate Mollick. Mm-hmm. So at some point, we will come back to Band, and we'll do more of these, and eventually there will be enough to do a book.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask that you've got several series. I'm going to touch on each of them as we go along real quick. But how did you break into comics? You know, as a musician, as kind of alluded to, I don't often see people who are into both fields at the same time, because like I said, I sing in the choir and stuff like that too, so I can understand your interest in both. But how did you break into writing comics? Was it through Band, or how did you do that?
No, actually, I had done some stuff before Band, before the strip, that is. I mean, I guess the real beginning of it would be, I'd have to mention my brother. My brother, Bill Hensley, is also a very talented artist. And I mean, I wanted to be a comic artist myself when I was in school, like high school. And even before that, I always just kind of assumed that I would grow up to be a cartoonist or a comics artist. Something I always wanted to do. And for a kid, I was pretty good, but I just never quite got to that level. So by the time it was time to decide what to do with my life, music kind of got the nod instead of art. Mm-hmm. So years later, I did music school and became a musician. And I got a younger brother who's about 10 years younger than me. And now he also was a trumpet player and an artist, but he went the other way. So he actually was a better artist than me and was less interested in music, and he ended up going the other way. So when he, just after he finished high school, he was kind of getting a portfolio together. And we had a sister who was about to graduate high school, and as a gift, he and I made a little comic for her where she was the main character. So we did this thing. I figured out how to write a comic script. At that point, I hadn't read comics in forever. I'd just kind of fallen off the map and didn't know what the scene looked like anymore, but I started getting back into it then and read some books on how to write a comic script, educated myself on how that whole thing works. So started doing more stuff with him, and it was just really, really fun. So we did a short story together. We made the thing for our sister Carrie, and then we did another short story called The Well, which is I think it was 12 pages or so, like a black and white, a poem basically that I wrote for him, and he illustrated it. And then we did another spinoff of that, and we were working on this other thing, and eventually he got busy, and I started looking for other artists to work with, and it was just a hell of a good time, and I love the collaborative aspect to it. It's like small group jazz that gets made one musician at a time, you know, like it's first the bass and then the drums and the piano and then the horn, and it's like instead of all happening at the same time, but it's every bit as collaborative as a jazz combo, and I really love that. I love how every voice in the group shapes the finished product so completely. I just got completely addicted. So yeah, I started finding other artists to work with and put together some pitches, and it ended up working out.
Wow, how about that? Because the list that I see of your books is Last Sons of America, The Last Boys of Yubo Bremen, Killing Marcus, and you've got another series called Warlords of Appalachia coming out from Boom Studios before long. Why don't you kind of give us a TV guide version of what each of those series is about?
Okay, cool. Let's see. Lost Boys of the U-Boat Bremen is a period horror story that takes place on a U-boat at the end of World War II. And whenever I sum it up for people, and like very briefly, I say it's like Ridley Scott's Alien meets Lord of the Flies on a U-boat. It's a story that takes place, you know, in a very small, confined area where everything goes wrong. And I found out that at the end of World War II, the Nazis were recruiting teenagers and older guys to fill their trenches and boats. I just couldn't imagine. I mean, the whole idea of being on a submarine has always kind of freaked me out a little bit. It seems like just a terrifying environment to be in when people were shooting at you.
So how do you get this book? I was going to want to know how we can get a hold of this. Is it still in print right now? How's that going?
No, Lost Boys of the U-Boat Bremen right now is available for free on my site on philipkennedyjohnson.com.
Oh, cool.
It's 100 pages. It's 5 issues, 110 pages, all finished. I mean, it's finished in black and white. Mm-hmm. Dustin will be coloring it at some point soon.
Cool.
At some point, we're going to be getting it in print. We're just figuring out where to take it. But right now, it's all on my site for free, and we're very proud of it.
Okay.
So there's that one. There's Last Sons of America was my first book with Boom Studios. And Last Sons of America takes place in a world in which Americans can no longer have children. And it creates this world where kids are like money. The richest country in the world can't have kids. And so children become valued commodities and the adoption business explodes. And it follows these two American adoption agents, these two brothers who live in Nicaragua, buying, bartering, and stealing kids to ship back to the States, and they end up stealing the wrong kid and they have to get out of the country. It's a crime story set in that world, set over that backdrop.
Wow. Because, you know, there have been stories like Why the Last Man always makes me think of the, in these kinds of genres. But that's a real unique take. I've never heard of that take before, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, thank you. We're very happy with it. That's a boom. The trade is out now. Trade came out in January. 4-issue series. That's all wrapped up. Cool. And Warlords of Appalachia is another one that recently finished. Those 4 issues are out, and the trade will be coming out in July. Hmm. Warlords of Appalachia draws on a lot of the political tensions that are kind of defining the country these days. Hmm. That takes place after the second American Civil War. Hmm. And by the time the comic starts, Kentucky has become an occupied nation within U.S. borders. And it follows this guy as he falls backwards into a revolution. He accidentally sparks a rebellion and finds himself at the center of it.
Hmm. And what about Killing Marcus?
Killing Marcus is actually it's a webcomic that I did with my good friend Scott Van Domelen and Dustin Mollick, who I mentioned before. And that actually became the first issue of Smoketown.
Really?
Yeah. It's almost the same exact story. Like, if you read Killing Marcus, it's practically Smoketown number one.
Oh, wow. Like,
and it was originally going to be just a one-shot. We made it because we had a cool story and we wanted to do it, so we just did it. But then my friend Joe Pruitt, Jim Pruitt, man, and even when I was talking about these guys, I mix them up. Two twin brothers. I don't know if you know the Pruitts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I interviewed Jim, and that should have been on last week on the podcast.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, Jim's a great guy and a good friend. And I didn't meet him that long ago, though. We were getting to know each other around the time that Killing Marcus came out. And he saw it and wanted to put it out with Scout Comics. He was just starting out with Scout, and he wanted to put it out there. And I believe in Jim and the work that he did back in the day with Caliber and Image, and I trusted him, and I wanted to do it. So I took it over there. So now he and Brendan and the people of Scout Comics are putting it out. It was supposed to be a one-shot, but we ended up making a series out of it. So now it's become kind of an anthology story where each issue is a standalone story. Mm-hmm. That you can read by itself, and it all makes sense. You don't have to read the others. But if you read them all, it's a bunch of short stories that tie together to tell a larger story, much like the movie Pulp Fiction does.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember correctly, this is all taking place in a town in Pennsylvania.
Yes, it's a town that's, in the story, is nicknamed Smoketown.
Mm.
Yeah, crime story. And each issue shows, the whole story revolves around a soldier's final days before his murder. This guy comes back from war, and gets involved in some bad things and ends up getting killed. And you see his last days in Pennsylvania from different perspectives and how it affects all these different people and how all the stories tie together.
Oh.
Through all these stories, you see the different aspects of the crime scene in this town and how they all work together.
Because when I talked to Brendan Dineen, I mentioned to him, and I'll mention to you the same thing, is I'm from a small town in Pennsylvania. They don't call it Smoketown. I'm from Taylor, which is a suburb of Scranton in the Northeast. And yeah, it's a very small town. Of course, Brendan actually said he went to college at the University of Scranton up there.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's all this Pennsylvania stuff all gets tied together. Have you lived in Pennsylvania? Is that why you're writing about this subject?
No, I've been there a lot. Pennsylvania is a very interesting place. I live in the D.C. Baltimore area, which, like you said, you used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played a lot of gigs in PA.
Mm.
So I've spent a lot of time there. I have an old teacher that lives and works up there now in Indiana, IUP. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, for listeners, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Indiana is the name of a town in PA, mm-hmm. and that's where he works. Yeah, I visited him a lot. I've played a lot of gigs with the Army Field Band and also with the Glenn Miller Band, who I was with before.
Really?
So I come to know Pennsylvania pretty well.
Wow, pretty cool.
Not like you and Brendan. I mean, I can't claim to be a native, but mm-hmm. but yeah, it's always interested me.
Well, it's a very different place, you know. When I get to the Maryland, Baltimore area, there's this massive drop-off, you know, up and through Pennsylvania's mountains and winding roads all over the place. And you get to Maryland, all of a sudden, woof, it goes flat just about. And I always, it took me a long time to get used to that because I'm so used to driving in the mountains and stuff. So,
yeah.
And it's a different way of looking at things up there, too, very much. You know, they call things, I'm trying to remember the right phrase for what soda is. I think is it pop or soda? I can't remember. I think pop's in the D.C. Baltimore area, and I think soda is up in Pennsylvania. It's like hoagie for sub and stuff like that. It has a very unique way of speaking to each other up there and thinking, too, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to pick your brain more about that as the story continues, actually.
Okay, sure. Because I was born and raised there. I'm one of a pair of identical twins. We were born in coal mining country. And comics were like, oh, no, nobody reads comics. Oh, no. But my brother and I were ones that did. And what the best part is, in my hometown now, there's an artist who was born and raised in Taylor, Pennsylvania, who draws comics now.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember who he is?
Yeah, Tom Derenick.
Okay.
That's his name, and he's from that area. And it's so weird for me because, like I said, my brother and I grew up, it was like, oh, you read comics and stuff. Here's somebody who makes his living from comics in that area. It's just a strange thing. And everybody, they don't look at him quite the way they looked at us.
If you do get a chance to check out The Lost Boys of the U-Boat Bremen, the artist on that actually grew up in a little town right across the river from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He's just a little local guy, too. But, man, his art is killer. You won't believe how beautiful his work is.
Because I have to read all this stuff. Because I have to tell you, the first two issues, like I was talking about, Smoketown, it just impressed me greatly. When I talked with Brendan originally, he was running down the list of books, and there was a lot of really interesting things. But Smoketown was the one that kind of leaped out at me. Of course, the Pennsylvania connection, the gripping cover, which I really like. If you see the cover for Smoketown number one, you've got a rainstorm coming down. There's like a red car with a door open. Mm-hmm. And my brain wants to solve these mysteries. Why is the car door open in the middle of a rainstorm, which shouldn't happen?
Right.
And so I was just pulling into that. I had to know what the story was. And they made that available to me. Of course, I wrote a review of Smoketown number one for MajorSpoilers.com, too, which anybody can go and just look it up there. You'll find it there, which I really, okay. You can tell by that. I really loved it. I thought it's just a terrific book.
I think I remember that review. I remember being very thoughtful. So, yeah, I'm really glad you dug it. I'm glad you liked the cover, too, because I didn't know how people would take it. I went back and forth with Scott a lot about, like, ideas for what we could do because it was hard to sum it up. At one point, there was going to be a photo of the family in the story, but it was hard, like, different ideas that we had. Like, I want something that sort of summed up what was going to happen without giving it away.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that was hard about the photo is that the family photo, it just suggested that the kid was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed really dark and not accurate about how things go in the story. So we kind of had different ideas about how to make it foreboding without bringing the image of, like, child death.
Mm-hmm. The story is really gripping. Both of these books, I'll focus on the first one because it's out and we can talk more about that. I don't want to spoil anything about the second one.
Okay.
But the first issue to me was this great story. Now, as I wrote in my review, I guess I'm fortunate in the sense that I'm not really familiar with a lot of what happens when abuse takes place. And so this story was really an education for me. I began to understand a lot of what people who go through that or in that experience feel and understand and what kinds of things that might drive them to. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that story, the basics of the story, is about?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Smoketown, at its core, is about people who have kind of fallen through the cracks. Some of them are criminals, but some of them, like most of them, in fact, came to that life kind of through circumstances that are not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
At least they didn't start out that way. Like, if there is a bad guy in the first issue, mm-hmm. it's this character who is abusive and has all these anger issues and PTSD, and he's kind of a mess. And then in the next issue, mm-hmm. you take a step back and you see the next story is his, and you see a little piece of how he came to be that way. And then the third issue is about another character that you find in issue two. Like, I wanted to keep taking a step back and see this character that you thought was a villain or that you thought was to be hated or feared in some way, and take a step back and show you who they are and how they get to be that way. Like, if there's a theme to the whole series, it's that everyone's the hero of their own story.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, as far as the abuse, yeah, that's something I do know something about, and I wanted to just paint a picture of it without being all, you know, woe is me about it. Like, I just wanted to show what people go through and how people can do extreme things when their kids are threatened or when their back is against a wall.
Now, the great thing about the book that really gripped me the whole way through were the surprises. And in no way in this world am I going to spoil any of them. But let's just say there are some tense moments when it looks like something's going to happen and it doesn't. We see something else that's come up when I want to spoil it, but I can't. Let's just say that there's a situation that is there that we come across that it isn't the way we expect it to be, but it is another way. And because it's that other way, I was very surprised. And then, of course, we get to the end where there's a massive surprise, which in no way would I even hint at about what's going on at the end, because I just, when I read that, I was just shocked. My jaw hit the ground when I saw that. And it's just such a well-written story. The thing about the story that gets me is if I try to describe it to people, I find that if I give certain facts away, or in fact, almost any fact away, it's going to spoil the story. Which to me is a really well-written story is when that's the case. If I can't sit there and say, well, so-and-so and so-and-so happens, and this and that and the other goes, that tells me that, okay, all this is so nicely and tightly woven together that it's just a superb story. That's the kind I really love to read. And so that was one of the things I wanted to mention to you is that I thought this book was crafted so strongly that, you know, I try to describe it to people and I go, well, I don't want to spoil that part. I don't want to spoil that part either. How am I going to describe this book to you? So I always just tell them, just read it. You know, get the book and read it. That's the best way to do it.
You have to talk about it pretty vaguely, I guess, when you're describing it to other people. Mm-hmm. Thanks for trying not to spoil the endings. There are a lot of chances in this book to do things to make the most out of the comics medium, like with the page turns and manipulating where the camera is looking and using the words to kind of misdirect some of the things that comics can do that you can't even do quite in film. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make the most of. So I'm really glad that you dug those.
Now's a good time to talk about the art. I thought the art was really good, too, and the use of color. The use of color is rather subdued in this story. There's not a lot of brightness. There's something bright once in a while, like a police car goes by, and you see the red and the blue on the top of the police car. But most of the time, the colors are really, it fits the tone of the story to me in the sense that it's a kind of a dark and morose thing that's going on, and the colors represent that to me. And I don't know if you had a hand in that, or was that something that the colorist did? How did that work out to go like that?
Well, I definitely had input. I tried not to micromanage Dustin too much. Yeah, the colorist and letterer is Dustin Mollick, and he did an amazing job. And Scott Van Domelen did too. Scott Van Domelen is a friend of mine, actually from my Miller Band days. And when I played in Glenn Miller Band, there was a saxophonist who at the time I did not know was into comics. And at the time, I wasn't into comics myself. Like, I had kind of given them up. Mm-hmm. And then years later, we meet up again, and we're both living in the Washington, D.C. area, and discover he's a great artist, and it all sort of worked out. It was just uncanny how good this guy was without actually working in the industry. And he'd never done a comic before, and I had written Killing Marcus is sort of on a whim without having an artist in mind for it. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of happened. We're like, well, hell, let's just do this. Mm-hmm. And then we brought Dustin on board as well as the colorist. Dustin is just such a great colorist, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he has such great instincts for it. And his technique is constantly getting better. It's just stupid how much better he's gotten this past year. It's all about communication. I mean, all three of us are musicians. All three of us are jazz musicians. And we all understand intimately the importance of communication. And we've had a lot of communication on the art of this book without micromanaging each other. Like, I would offer input. When he first got started, when he just did the first couple of pages, he gave me probably like 9 or 10 different versions of what we could do with the colors. And we sort of I mean, it wasn't exactly he wasn't like just giving me choices like here, pick one. It was like here's some things I could do. Here's one direction I could go. Here's another direction I could go. Mm-hmm. Some of them were more colorful than others, more saturated. Some of them were much more bleak looking. Mm-hmm. Them had a kind of a smoky filter over the top of the whole thing where it looked almost like from a distance. Some of them had more extreme shadow. Mm-hmm. We talked about the benefits of each one, which what we wanted the palette to look like. And Scott also had input. It was hugely collaborative. Mm-hmm. And then when we settled on a direction that we were going to go, I pretty much just cut him loose and wait for the pages to come in. And then when a page back, we talk about details. Like, what do you think about like making this thing pop a little more? Like if, I don't know if you play video games at all, mm-hmm. but in games, sometimes you can tell if there's a great big room or a maze or something, and it's super unclear where you're supposed to go next. Sometimes the designers will throw you a bone and like highlight a door just a little bit, like, or like get the, use the lighting to sort of guide the way where you might go. Or if it's too simple, too easy, maybe obscure it a little bit in that way, mm-hmm. using light and color. And Dustin does that too. Like he'll use light to emphasize certain things or hide or obscure or bring attention to various things. It's really excellent work. And I love that all the textures underneath everything too. It's not just, there's no flats anywhere. There's no flat colors, flat pools of color. Like a lot of it, even just a wall or a ceiling or something that should be pretty plain, mm-hmm. there's all this texture in it that makes everything look like just a little bit grimy. And it fits the story and the characters so well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also have to talk about the art itself, about the drawings, because the facial expressions are really good. Another thing that I was struck to about the story was the fact that, you know, as a comics reader, I'm used to punching and kicking and, you know, running and jumping and laser beams and good things like that. But this is much more of a realistic story in that sense. And I thought that there's not a lot of, let's say, action as a word to use for right now. But there's things that happen, and there are facial expressions that are very human. There's a police officer who comes to a car and talks to someone. His smile makes you feel like he's a real person.
Right.
You know, there's a whole bunch of facial expressions and movements and things that are very realistic. And I really loved that. That was one of the things about the book that you always like to say that the art draws the people in and the story is what keeps people. And
yeah.
Both of these, I thought, the ultimate comic is when they work together so well that you don't notice one from the other. It's just the whole storytelling experience. And I felt that about the Smoketown issue number one, issue number two as well. But issue number one, I think that's what drew me into it so strongly, was how your story and the art actually was like a marriage that worked superbly together.
Oh, thanks very much. And I definitely agree on Scott's art. His big gift, I mean, he's talented all the way around, but his big gift with his artwork is, I mean, just the way he does faces and how dynamic everyone looks. Like everyone looks like they're in motion all the time. Like he's really great with people. Mm-hmm. And that cop, man, I love that cop.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to use him again in the series because it's just, yeah, like, when you first see him, between his body type and that mustache mm-hmm. and the way he carries himself and that smile is so genuine, you know, he just looks like he's right out of a Norman Rockwell painting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You already understand who he is, you know? Like you understand that he's this simple guy just trying to do his job as a small town cop, and he really believes in the work that he does and has this kind of rose-tinted glasses look about the world and his gig and everything. And then later you see that same smile. She says something that catches his eye, mm-hmm. and then the next time he smiles at her, it's a little bit less, and there's a tiny hint of suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to show all that on a face mm-hmm. with a pen, I mean, you forget how hard that is, because it just looks so effortless when Scott does it.
Mm-hmm. This is so well done. The great thing, and this story really takes place within the space of a couple of hours.
Right.
Normally in comics, you've got things that span days. In fact, we lose track of time. But this one, because it's such a confined time span and certain things, you're pulling out like a part of a whole story. We're getting to see the most important part of what would be like somebody's whole story. We're getting to see the critical point of it. And I just thought that was so well done. I just thought that being able to do that and do that concisely and to grab people's attention like I was grabbed, I just thought, wow, this is just the most amazing thing. Because comics, like I said, I tend to focus on violence and tend to focus on action and adventure and buckle that swash and stuff like that. And I enjoy the other kinds of stories real well, but not everyone grips me like yours does. And so I really thought this was a real accomplishment to be able to tell this kind of a story and just keep my attention, just wrap the whole time all the way through. And I was going like, I can't wait to see what the next one is.
Oh, thanks. Well, that really means a lot to hear that. Yeah, there's some writing cliche, like I can't remember who said it, but get in late and get out early. Like it's, you know, get in as late as you can, like show the stuff that really matters. And I really wanted to get into the story after this crime has been committed where, okay, oh my God, I've done this thing. Now what do I do? Mm-hmm. And to see those critical moments where this person has to try to save herself and save her kid and, mm-hmm. you know, get away with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. See, now I want to see the Killing Marcus and compare Smoketown number one to Killing Marcus and see how different it is or how close they are.
It's practically the same. It's just making a one shot into the first issue of a series is all. Like, you'll find very little that are different.
Okay. Well, it's like I said, it was a terrific book. I just loved it. The moment I was drawn to the whole concept of it, and then when I got to read the book, I just knew why I was drawn, because that's a great story.
Oh, thanks.
And now I've got to ask, of course, how do people get a hold of Smoketown number one at this point?
Well, Smoketown number one is in stores. If they're not at your store, you can ask your store to order it through Diamondsdale, or you can actually get it from Scout Comics online. There's a store where you can buy your comics directly through Scout. And if it's not up already, it will be available on Comixology as well.
Mm. Yeah, Comixology is a great thing because what it does is it allows you, if you can't find a physical copy or a paper copy, you can actually download it and read the story. So if you know if you need to, you can search out paper copies.
Yeah, exactly. I used to be like hardcore. I loved all my having my stuff physical, but I've kind of become a convert. I mean, I still love having them in physical copies, but... Mm. I don't have a problem buying, like if they have some kind of a crazy sale where Warren Ellis is, you know, 80% off or some crazy, like I'll buy up some obscure books that I have never found in the store and buy them up. So yeah, I'm a big believer in Comixology now too.
Very cool. Very cool. Now let's get on to issue two, which, you know, again, I want to thank you for letting me read it because it was just as much as I loved one, I loved two.
Oh, thanks.
And now, as far as issue two comes, do you have a release date for issue number two?
Yes, it is the first week of May. And even that one is not like in stone, but I'm told that it's going to be the first week of May.
Okay. So around the 3rd, May 3rd, when it will come out, which would be great. Of course, it's probably a little late to order it at this point, but you can always call your store and tell them you want this, and they can call Diamond and see if copies are available through Diamond.
Yeah, it should be in stores on May 3rd, according to this.
Okay. Now, the thing I always want to ask is, how about a TV guide description for the second issue? What can you tell us about it that doesn't spoil it?
Yeah, so again, the first issue used to be called Killing Marcus. Mm-hmm. And you see the body on page 2, so I guess I'm not spoiling anything too much. There's a murder in the first issue. Mm-hmm. And again, that second issue, you take a step back and you see that person's story. Like, how did he get there? Mm-hmm. This guy was a soldier. He saw and did some crazy things, and he comes back home, and he's changed. And so you see how he became broken, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then it also leads us into it doesn't lead right into his death. It leaves the door open to show more of his story between issue two and issue one.
Mm-hmm. Same artist team?
Yeah, same art team. Yeah, the same art team should be doing the whole book, the whole series.
That's good stuff.
And we make the most out of Scott's use of faces and Dustin's crazy tense use of color. Like, there's a lot of like the way he uses red in issue two. Now, the way he uses red in his covers for this series is really great. Like, there's this red on blue thing that he's been doing with the covers that's really striking, and that actually makes some really tense moments in the issue two as well as in the interiors. Mm-hmm. Can't wait for people to see it.
No, it's a fantastic issue. You see an issue number one, and if it's great, you think, can he ever match up to that in the second issue? And I was very pleasantly happy to find out that, yes, you can. You can make issue two just as good as issue number one.
That's awesome.
And I just thought it was fantastic the way you did that. Now, I've got to ask, because it's a military guy that's the focus in the second issue, did you draw it all from your experience in the military, people you knew, any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I haven't done the kind of things that he's doing. Like, my job in the military is very different than Marcus's in the story. Mm-hmm. It's just not the kind of job I do. But yeah, I do know people who have deployed and have been in crazy situations like these. Mm-hmm. And I know I have friends who are probably deploying again soon. And so it's on my mind. So yeah, I would say these things are on my mind more than the average person, I guess.
Well, again, there's surprises along the way. There is, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's when he, the Marcus gets to see his child for the first time, he has a reaction I didn't expect. And yeah. So for me, that was, once again, we start to get to know the person through little things like this, things that aren't what we expect. We begin to understand what he's thinking and feeling as a result of that. And I remember just being, when I saw this, when I read it just recently, I was just like shocked. You know, once again, see, I love a good surprise. One of the things that, as being an experienced comic reader for many years, the thing that I love more than anything is to get a good surprise that makes sense. Not one that sort of just drops out of, you know, away from Mars all of a sudden. I want this one that makes sense, and that there are a lot of those same kinds of surprises in this book as there was in the first one. And so it's not the same surprises. It's different surprises, but you do get well thought out and well displayed surprises in it, which is...
Thanks. Well, I mean, yeah, the page turn is so important, you know, in comics. Like, you really want to propel the reader forward and just keep them just flipping through the book like they just can't wait to see what the next thing is. So yeah, the surprise, like you said, is a big thing. As far as the reaction you talk about at the beginning when he sees his child for the first time, there was a very powerful moment in, I think it was in Flags of Our Fathers. Mm-hmm. Is that the companion piece to Iwo Jima?
I think so. I could be wrong.
Clint Eastwood film. Mm-hmm. They've made heroes out of these guys who raised the flag in Iwo Jima. Like they took that amazing photo, and then when they come home, they're hailed as heroes, and the Native American guy that was in that group is just not having it. Like, he just doesn't understand or accept the mantle of hero that has been given to him, and he's just broken inside. And they were about to go out and do a photo op or something at a football game or something like that in the movie, and the mother of one of the guys that didn't make it back, at least one of the guys who raised the flag, got shot soon after that and killed. And his mother was there, and he met the mother for the first time, and they just come together, and they immediately start bawling, and they hug it out. Like, they hug and cry, and they'd never met before. It's just this really powerful moment where instead of a big greeting, it was like this shared loss and anguish, and it just really stuck with me, you know? And there are other moments in that story where that same guy, the Native American guy, like, why are they calling us heroes? All I did was try not to get shot. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't understand. He just comes back and he's confused and broken and lost. And I wanted to try to sum up some of that in this emotional moment where he's seeing his family for the first time and he's still stuck back there in war. He's not ready to see his family yet. He's still over there.
Well, the one thing I loved about the second book in particular was the very first sentence, which drew me in. It was a Nancy Drew mystery book I read. I remember reading, I was walking through a store and I picked up this Nancy Drew book. And the first sentence read, she couldn't believe the car was headed straight for her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, car? Heading for her? What? What's going on? And the very first sentence in your, if it's okay, I'll read the first sentence. And it's the day after it happened, I asked my first sergeant, how do you deal with it? Now, of course, there's something in there that we don't understand yet. And it takes a little while to get to what he's talking about later on in the book. But when I saw that moment, I read that, I went, wait a minute, I don't understand what that's all about. So I have to know these things. And see, again, it's like that car racing toward you. What the heck is going on here? And like, you know, I'm the kind of guy that wants to know. And so for me, I kept reading the book going, what is it? What's going on? What's happening as a result of that? So that very first sentence grabbed me. And I think comics, we tend to respond visually, but if a sentence like that can grab a hold of your attention just as well as the art, then I think, you know, that you deserve kudos for that just as well as how terrific the art is.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I'm really glad you dug it. I'm really excited. Again, this is the first full-length comic book that either Dustin or Scott has done, or the first issue was. And to see them grow on the series is going to be really, really exciting. I mean, the second issue, I'm really glad to hear you dug it because I'm more proud of it even than I was of issue one, and I think it's just going to keep getting better and better. So,
well, you realize you're raising the bar high. Every issue now I'm going to read now. The first one I thought was, well, that could just be a fluke because, you know, sometimes the first issue is great. But the second issue was great too, so now when I get the third issue, my expectations are going to be much higher.
Bring it on. I'm ready.
Okay, well, I can't wait to read it now because, well, let's ask, do you know when the third issue is likely to hit the stands?
Well, the series comes out bi-monthly. Okay. And so far, the first two issues have come out in the first few days of the month. This came out, I want to say March 1st, and now May 3rd, it looks like. This next one's going to be out. So I would say the first few days of July will probably be issue 3.
Cool.
And really excited for you to read that one, too, because as a Pennsylvania man, you should get things that that you recognize.
Oh, boy. I can't wait for that now. I thought these first two were really great. Now, it's five-issue series. How many is in this?
Right now, it's ongoing. We'll see how long we decide to go.
Wow. You mean you're going to keep stepping back issue to issue as we go along?
At some point, it will start going forward, but for now, it's introducing new characters. Like we're getting a more complete picture of the town and what's happening there. And at some point, it will start moving forward chronologically. Okay. But right now, we're just introducing more and more characters, showing their perspective and how they can all be the heroes of their own story and still be doing bad things.
Right. Now, of course, got to ask. Smoketown's going real well, and you got these other books. Are there other projects that you have coming out that we should be aware of?
There are, and I cannot wait to talk about them. Unfortunately, I can't yet. I have some things that are already finished, or written at least, that have not yet been announced. Okay. So I can't talk about those yet. But some of them are licensed. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for you to see them. I've been writing some characters that I really love, and it's been super exciting. Mm-hmm. Can't wait for those to come out. And I'm still pursuing creator-owned stuff as well. Cool. So we're still looking for a home that's not exactly true. Figuring out where Lost Boys of the U-Boat Bremen is going to be, but that's going to happen. I've also got a ton of other pitches out there that are in various stages of getting looked at or made. So there will definitely be more comics coming in the very near future.
Okay. Now you alluded to something that one of the benefits of Scout Comics is the fact that Brendan has lots and lots of ties to filmmakers and TV makers and stuff like that. And this could really be a great TV show, in my opinion. Have you talked to Brendan about that? Is there any possibility that Smoketown could end up on, say, USA or on, I wouldn't say sci-fi. It's not science fiction any enough, but something like a TNT or anything like that?
I can't talk about stuff.
Okay, well, you're thinking about it. What matters is you're thinking about it, and that's a possibility, and that's enough for me. I don't ever want to get spoilers or spoil anything or ruin anything that I really think would be a wonderful thing by us talking about it. So I'm just glad you're considering that, and there's a possibility of something like that down the pike.
Yeah, I mean, I when I make a comic, I try not to make the mistake of writing it as an obvious. Like, I'm not trying to write it as a TV show or a movie. Like, I write these comics to be comics. Mm-hmm. And if they get attention in other media, that's great. But I try not to make it a lesser comic book to make it a better movie pitch, you know?
Well, I always like to say that a comic is like a pitch, a visual pitch for what a TV show could look like.
Yeah.
Every panel shows what you could do on the TV screen or on the movie screen. So I think you guys have set up a perfect example of why this would be a success on the small or big screen, frankly.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's a story I love telling. And if it gets attention someplace else, then that's a conversation I'd love to have. But for right now, we're having a great time just making the comic book.
Well, Philip, we'll have to talk again sometime when you can talk about these other projects coming along.
Oh, man, I would love that.
If they're as good as Smoketown, I can't wait to see them. So it's a great book. I can't wait for other people to get to read more of it. And I just think you're doing a terrific job, and I can't wait to see the other stuff that you've got in store for us as fans.
So. I'm a fan of yours, too. It's been cool to see your work on your site on Major Spoilers. And I saw that you interviewed my friend Ron Mars recently, and you, Brendan, and like we've got a lot of friends in common, and you always do a great job. So thanks again for having me on.
Well, sure, appreciate it. But it's called Wayne's Comics because the focus is on the comics. It's not on me because I always want to be sure that I don't interview anybody whose stuff I don't really love or I don't want to tell other people about, and that's why I wanted to be able to talk with you. So, but keep it up, Philip. You're doing wonderful stuff. I'd say you're off to a great start, but you're already well into it, so just keep it up.
Thanks a lot, Wayne. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.